everyone, welcome to another episode of the Onigiri & Co. podcast. We are still on video, we are on audio as usual, and today my guest is Kai Vertigo. Hello!
Hey, thanks for having me. Oh my gosh. Here we go.
No worries. Thanks for joining. I am actually really, really interested in your profile as a pilot and as a person. And we have talked a little bit on Instagram before, but mainly I'm just watching your videos. And it's really cool that we haven't talked too much before the podcast, so I get to know you today.
Yeah, exactly. I'm excited for it too. I know we've been following each other for a while. And then I've been seeing you upload content where you're just talking about FPV. So I just want to give you flowers, first of all, for doing something so consistently. I've noticed it's almost been 3 years now since you've been doing this. Is that accurate?
Yeah. You've noticed, right?
Yeah, yes. It's I know how much work it can be to keep something consistently. And it seems like you enjoy it. So I'm really happy for you. And I also want to say thank you for doing it.
No, thank you. Thank you a lot. Yeah, I do enjoy the podcast a lot. It's my new era of contributing to FPV. I used to fly and share my flying, and because life has changed, I still fly, but I feel like what I'm bringing to the hobby with my flying, where I fly, is just car parks and, you know, backyards. And so I'm thinking the podcast, at least for the community, is slightly more interesting than my flying at the moment. So that's why I changed. But speaking of content creation, maybe you want to introduce yourself to the audience?
Sure, I will. So hi, guys. My name is Kai. I have been flying for a little bit over 3 years now. So honestly, relatively to the people that I feel like you have on the show, I'm still a baby and I still have a lot to learn. But thankfully, because of the generosity of people around me who were kind enough in the community to share their knowledge about FPV, coming from a background in video, which I know a handful of pilots have had that blessing and advantage of doing, I was able to take the information and the resources that I was able to learn from the friends and people around me, and even online and off, and apply that to FPV and combine that with my video experience to thankfully be able to make some sort of a living as a content creator, as a videographer, as someone who works in production and in the industry in San Diego and Los Angeles. And yeah, I'm still learning every single day. I still make mistakes every single day, but I'm also very grateful for being able to do this, you know, to be on this journey. And this is really exciting to be on this show, because I don't think I've ever had an opportunity to talk with another pilot on the air like this. So thank you again for having me.
Oh, that's awesome. So I'm interested in your background in general. Like, what were you doing before getting into FPV?
Yes. Okay. So it's definitely been a topsy-turvy type of road, I would say. I noticed, Oni, I did a little bit of listening to the prior episodes, and I did listen to one where you shared a little bit about your background and how you started very young with martial arts, right? So I had a very similar background, actually. I'm also an only child, and I got enrolled into Taekwondo, which is like the Korean martial art, when I was about 6. And I did that for almost 11 years, and it helped a lot. I gained a lot of discipline and being able to have a level of athleticism from that. But there was a point I think I really liked about martial arts, which was definitely the leveling up and the feeling of progression from, you know, gaining new belts. And then I really enjoyed sparring and being able to exchange with other people and the social aspect of it. And so when I got into high school and I got transferred to a new high school, I didn't know anybody there. And I remember in middle school, this is around 2008, 2007, when dancing was getting really popular. It was like the really cool thing to do for kids. I think here in the US, we had like America's Best Dance Crew. There's like Jabba Walkies and all these different things that was happening. And I remember all the cool kids were dancers. And I really wanted to be a cool kid, right? As every single young middle schooler wants to be. But I wasn't really that cool. I just really liked comics, anime, and all that stuff. This wasn't cool yet. And so I liked to say I was. And when I got to this high school, I didn't really have a group of people to talk with except for one person. And he was like, hey, I remember you like breakdancing, right? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, yeah, I got the perfect person to introduce you to. He takes me up to this guy, and his name is Austin, and he is the president of the B-Boy Breakdance Club in our high school. And he's like very big and like buff. And then I'm like looking at him, and he's looking down at me, and he's like, you break? And I was like, yeah. And then he's like, okay, like, welcome to the club. I was like, all right, cool. And so, you know, he was thankfully very welcoming to me. And to this day, Austin and I are still really good friends. And if it wasn't for breaking, I would not be the person I am today. So that's a little bit of a interesting little, like, maybe selling point that makes me a little bit more unique. And I think breaking was really the first thing that I was able to dedicate myself to, next to martial arts, that I really felt like I belonged and like I wanted to dedicate a big part of my life and passion to. And I quickly realized as I was going to school and all these things, I didn't want to be a professional dancer. That's not really what I felt like I wanted. And my passion didn't lie so much in the dancing aspect of things, but more in the storytelling aspect, where I think the reason I actually really enjoyed breaking so much is because it felt like I was living in an anime or something, or comic book. Because you train, and then you show up to these battles where these crazy guys and girls who are doing these crazy moves. And obviously, when you're starting out, you suck, but you suck a little bit less every time, and you try new things, and you find these heroes that you look up to. And video allowed me to kind of capture these stories. So in high school, I picked up a camera. I learned how to use Windows Movie Maker. And I torrented Sony Vegas with the help of a friend, learned how to edit, you know? And that was kind of where I started to get an idea where I wanted to do filmmaking or video, potentially for a career. If animation wasn't going to work out, because that's kind of the source thing, I was like, all right, maybe I can take what I love so far, which is dance, and I can film that. So that was kind of my entry into video. And then once I started to learn how to do video, I was able to start to film more stuff. I was able to join some teams that film breaking and dance. And as soon as I learned that, I think COVID hit. It was right around the time I finished school in uni. And we were locked in. I didn't really have much to do. And that was kind of around the time where it was right before lockdown that thankfully on Instagram, I was able to start finding the people that eventually inspired me to learn FPV. I think, I'm not sure what generation I would consider myself in. Maybe you can shine more light on it, but this was like 2019, and I remember seeing the drifting video that Johnny FPV posted on his Instagram. And I was just, that was the very first time I'd ever seen FPV in my life. I had no idea that this tool and that this ability was possible before that. And I remember seeing that and being like, is this not a video game? Like, is this real? Is this possible? And it just rocked my world. And I remember that was kind of what sent me down the spiral. And thanks to our friend Joshua Bardwell and all these other people, I was able to be one of those kids who, and also thanks to DJI inventing the HD goggles and stuff like that, it was a lot more accessible. I was a part of this new generation that was able to learn. And over COVID, thankfully, I had just met a group of friends here in San Diego who were FPV pilots themselves. We might have some mutual friends because I ended up also getting a job at Newbie Drone over COVID too, helping them make content. I was literally just there right before coming here. And they told me to say hi to you, by the way. And so thanks to all these people and resources, I was able to learn quicker. Combining that with filmmaking, I started posting my own content, and of course I was just documenting the journey. And as things time went on, I was able to eventually start getting hit up and asked to do more stuff. And I think that's kind of that's what brings us to today. I'm still trying to make and do whatever I want to see hasn't been done, and use FPV as a storytelling device. That's kind of my approach to it, at least as of now.
Okay, that makes sense. And everything you said, I've had questions to ask, but I just want to say before the questions that I discovered you through the Newbie Drone account on Instagram. And I was like, oh, who's this person? Because I know most of them. At least there was a time I knew all of them, and I think people have a bit like left and new people came, and I'm like, I don't know this person. So then I clicked on your account, and the first videos I've seen, I really liked that you were storytelling. Like, you were telling a little story per reel, and I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, I really like storytelling. That's why I'm also a videographer beside, you know, FPV and stuff. It's, I feel like, people like you or other storytelling creator, it's always inspiring to see the way they're gonna show FPV and what they're gonna show with FPV. And when I discovered your account, I'm like, cool, I'm gonna follow this person. It's actually quite interesting. But I discovered you through Newbie Drone as well.
I see, it all makes sense now. Thanks to those guys who are here. Shout out to Newbie Jam.
Yeah. Yes, totally. So yeah, a couple of questions. When you started, so you said it was the start of, or during the drift era, we see a little bit less drift at the moment, or maybe it has become common, so we pay less attention.
Right.
What type of equipment were at your disposition? Like when you were like, okay, I'm starting FPV, what was around at that time?
Yeah, so I remember it was just around the time the DJI had announced the HD series for the very first time. So the HD air unit, okay, the HD goggles V1, it was those tools that I was like, okay, it seems like a good move. And I remember talking to my friends and they all were on analog and they're like, yeah, maybe try analog. And I was like, I forgot what made me decide to go HD, but I think it was just the ability to see clearer. And in my head, if I'm doing video, I wanted to be able to compositionally be able to see as well as I could. So that was kind of what made me decide to go that direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was your main struggle when you started flying FPV?
Yeah, main struggle. Okay. Well, I think everyone who has tried FPV before can relate to this, but it's definitely got a very high learning curve. And I think that's what makes it beautiful. And also it makes us very niche in a lot of ways, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing, because even though FPV has grown so much in popularity, and I owe so much of it to being able to have made work that has been widely recognized, or more widely recognized, because it's like just so mind-blowing to people. Everyone wants to be an FPV pilot. You know, everyone's be like, yeah, like I want to get into FPV. And I encourage that, and I make content that teaches that. But even with that, it still requires so much upfront effort. You have to, even now, as things get easier, there isn't quite much of a shortcut to learning how to fly in acro mode. You know, you still have to learn how to ride a bike again, but this time the bike is three-dimensional. It can go upside down, those things. So yeah, it's like, it's a little bit of a different story. And so I think it was the same for me. That was definitely it. But it was almost like a silver lining, because when lockdown happened for us, we didn't really have anything else to do. And all the parks were closed, or people were not supposed to be outside. But thankfully, there was a park by my house I could walk to, and I could just go in there, no one would be there, and I could go there and crash and fly as much as I wanted and go through like the playgrounds and obstacles until a cop would come and be like, hey bro, you can't be here. And I was like, all right. Oh, and then no. I'd leave and I'd go back, but he wouldn't be there every day, so I'd go at a different time every single day and be like, here. And then I'd be okay, I can fly my six packs, and I'll fly like six packs a day for like an hour, learn, iterate. And I think having that time was so valuable. I don't know what the training regimens or what the practice tendencies of people are like now who are learning, but having that time, that space, I feel very lucky to have had that. And I recommend that for anybody. If anybody can find a space to fly in real life, the simulator helps a ton, but there's so many nuances to real life that I think you can't really replace. So that would, I would say, would be the biggest challenge at the time when I started.
Yeah. I can relate to the six batteries a day. When I started, that's what I was doing, because I was able to. I was living where I was working. So I was living in Central Desert of Australia, and I was working in a school, and there was like a little side area of the school where there were like a little building where I lived. And then after school, the whole playgrounds, the whole like where the kids were playing footy and stuff like that, it was empty. So I was able to fly six batteries. I just had to charge, you know, and then I go out of my door and I have this whole playground. So that's what made me improve very quickly, you know. I think compared to some other people who, you know, were already, you know, you have a job, it's usually 30 to an hour away from your home, and then you have traffic, and so by the time you're back home, you have to charge your packs, and then you don't have a park next to your place. So at the time, having these conditions to learn FPV really helped me quickly reach, you know, the place where you're slightly comfortable, and your drone actually goes where you want it to go. Yeah. And not like, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to reach that spot there.
Right, so, exactly.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I can relate to that. And that's awesome that you were able to do it. And it's great that in a way the pandemic, you know, served you for FPV. And that's awesome.
Thank you. It's amazing. Like, I think we were both blessed to have that time and space to have learned. Because I remember hearing that on your episode when you were talking about your story. And first of all, it's such a cool story, and I want to hear more about it later down the line. But I just wanted to footnote that I do think, yeah, you're correct. A lot of people have a lot of work, and you know, they have a lot of obstacles in their way to fly. So finding your way around that's always really helpful. Whether that's if you can't go outside because weather doesn't allow. I know our mutual friend Alicia flies, like, she's in like Alaska, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, it's snowing like majority of the time there. So it can be hard to find the place. I get it. And so if, you know, you gotta make do with what you've got. And I think every single pilot who has found the ropes did their way of doing that. So if anyone's listening and feels like they're restricted spatially or temporally, then I think there's always a way to practice FPV, whether it's virtually indoors or if you can find a small place using a smaller quad, then yeah, you just got to find your way around it.
Yeah. Or sometimes you might have a spot closer to work. You can work somewhere where there's a park, or you can have like a car park or something like that. So yeah, and I'm totally aware that everybody has different restrictions or, you know, constraints in life, especially as we get older. Mm-hmm. Your approach to FPV, so obviously you had a video background, so you knew what you wanted to get as shots. But before being able to do those shots, you had to learn to fly. Do you think your background of martial art and your approach, I feel like for me it was similar. The approach I took to learn to fly was the same as learning a martial art. Do you think that was similar for you?
Interesting. Yeah, I would say so, actually. I think the reason I wanted to bring up all that was so that we could draw some dots. And I think when you mention it, I can see both for martial arts and for dancing. When I learned martial arts first, that informed me learning how to dance, because I think martial arts taught us so much about foundation and being able to learn a basic punch. And you always see in those kung fu movies, like, why am I practicing this horse dance for like a bunch of hours? I want to get the cool stuff. And then the master's like, you will once you get the horse dance, because it's important. And you're like, and then he's like, no. And then he like fails, but then he finally busts out the kick in the middle of the fight. And he's like, master was right. And it was kind of like that, right? With breaking and with martial arts, I think being able to take the time to understand the importance of foundation, I had made that mistake multiple times, both in Taekwondo and breaking, trying to go straight for the fun and crazy looking stuff. And every time I did that, it took way longer because I neglected to learn the foundations. Mm-hmm. And in FPV, I feel like one of the foundations that a lot of people, they miss because it's not as fun or sexy as like something, for example, like throttle control, being able to maintain your altitude at exactly where you want it to be and like understand the tendencies of your quad to hover at different rates and how to balance that. I think I remember Mr. Steele mentioning this in one of his tutorials, or it was one of the first tutorials I watched in flying, but someone recommended to fly in like car parks and places with ceilings so that you would practice just being able to hold that and not go too high and too far, because obviously we're so free when we're out in the open and like we're flying over a beach or flying in the sky. But if you really want to get those precise shots, then you're going to have to understand just how to hold your quad exactly where you want it to be at a certain point in time. And yeah, I think me doing martial arts and breaking and learning, for example, like how to do a basic punch or a basic stance, how to hold a specific freeze before going to the next power move or whatever you want to call it, knowing that helped a lot. And I think a lot of people do compliment me. They're like, dude, you fly so well. Like, it's always so precise and all these things. And I know for a fact that being an FPV pilot, you see all these people, and I'm sure you can relate. You're just watching them and you're like, wow, I suck. Like, people are so good. They're so talented. And I still feel that way. Like, I feel like I am by no means an amazing pilot. I feel like I have an understanding of what type of line and what type of shot I want to get. And I can at least, I have enough proficiency to at least make the drone do that. But yeah, I think having those foundations and practicing those really small nuanced things, they did help a lot. And I think if people are trying to get into that for cinematography, or they're trying to get good shots, then you don't necessarily have to be a crazy, crazy pilot who knows how to do insane, crazy tricks. It's more of understanding what you need and what type of shot you're getting. And usually that isn't the craziest stuff. It's more of just a base layer understanding how to navigate your quad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there's always difference between all the categories of FPV and when we started, you know, when people started first, I believe they started with racing and freestyle, and I don't know exactly which one was first. They might have sometimes you're like, oh wait a minute, I can do this with this drone. Let's with your mate, you're like, let's start racing. So I actually don't know which one was first. Once people sort of got in control of their drones, and then quickly. So that was obviously first generation before 2015. I stepped in 2017, which I consider is maybe second generation, or second and a half, because some people think 2015 was already one and a half. So I don't know.
Sure.
But shortly after that, especially 2018, cinematic, what everybody was saying, calling FPV cinematic was peaking. And a lot of freestyle pilots were like, oh, it's boring. Why is this getting more views than all my flip-flops? And I have to say, at the start, I was like, yeah, I understand why people do that, but I still prefer doing my flip-flops around my trees. But I was not hating. I was just like, that's the third branch, you know? And to me, it made sense that it was happening, because that's mainly also why I started the hobby. I'm like, cool, because always the storytelling kind of things. I'm like, I'm lucky at the moment that all I do is freestyle, but then I film what is around happening with my friends, happening with my travels. But I understood that some people were like, well, I don't want to film around me. I want my video to, my flying to tell the story. So that made sense. All of this to say that from your perspective, you said what is important is a good shot, is getting a good shot. So in your own style, if you can describe what makes a good shot to you in general.
Okay, good question. And I like how you undernoted that with your perspective, because I didn't know that actually. Mm-hmm. That I felt like when I went in, that was kind of in my eyes that FPV had just began its cinematic like journey, but in reality, it was already years in development
in the making,
you know? Exactly.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think this is, well, first off, I'm gonna get back to your question, but I think this is important to just to process for people who are getting into new things, whether it's FPV or for us, whatever we decide to get into in the future. But I think whenever we see something and we're like, damn, like it's already too late, you know, sometimes I feel that. Even going into FPV, I was like, there's already so many amazing, talented pilots. Like I look at Vanover and I look at Johnny and what they're doing, and like it's over. Like they've taken all the spots, right? And I think it's always so easy for us to tell ourselves that. But I guess in a lot of people's perspectives, I was someone who was too late. And if I had decided to take that belief, then I don't think I would have made it this far. So I think first of all, that's an important thing for me to process. Thanks for giving me the space to do that. And then to answer your question about the shots, yes. So I think that I learned also as well on my end from all FPV freestyle pilots. So their definition of good was very different from now what I would consider my definition of like my shot, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah. I was learning through them, which I'm grateful for, because it taught me to go crazy. I think it taught me to be able to learn all these tricks and to push the limits, which I think is so important for building your confidence as a pilot. So I think that no matter what type of flying you think you want to do, it is super valuable to practice everything. Because in the simulator, I'd practice racing. And then in real life, I started with freestyle. Like I was trying to get to learn everything, like from juicy flicks to the split S's and all these things. You know, like I tried to nail them all. And then when I came to cinematic flying, which I see like a lot of people from the freestyle world might consider more tame and like less skill based, I would say that they're not wrong. It's definitely warrant to that. But I think an analogy might help, because coming from the world of breaking, I know all these talented kids. There are these people who are they put in hours and they put in so much time and energy and body and mind, spirit, sweat and blood to becoming this incredible dancer and learning these moves and practicing their craft in a way that I feel like it's so layered that only people who really put in the time to learn themselves will understand just how much talent that takes. And but then when both, let's say, that master and someone who is doing like a TikTok dance. They share their work to the public eye. The TikTok dancer is like, boom, millions of likes. And then in the meantime, on the other side, like this crazy dancer may only get like less than 100 or something, you know, in relation. It's like way smaller in terms of quantifiable metrics. And I get it. I'm like, damn, it's a shame that talented people don't proportionally always get the love that they deserve. And I think that kind of can go along with what's the word? With shot perception as well, with what I might consider a valuable shot versus another person. And I think what I've done is I feel like I've learned a lot in terms of social media and marketing and human attention. And I've kind of learned a way to tell a story that leverages that attention and grabs it. And even if I'm not doing the craziest movement, then I can still craft and structure the story in a way and add a human element to it that people will more widely understand. And that was a season of my life I think I learned a lot about, because even before I got into FPV, I was already starting to play with social media. I've always been doing that for a couple of years. I think ever since I got out of high school, I was always like, okay, I think this could be a good tool to promote my business or to promote my videos, my filmmaking and my storytelling. So learning social media has been a big lesson as well, and learning how to create and craft content that people watch has always been big. Mm-hmm. So I think when it comes to making a shot that's valuable to me, it's interesting because right now I'm in a phase where I'm currently redefining that, since I feel like I've been using a very similar approach, which is if you watch my videos, you'll see that I have my FPV shot at the top and I have my reaction shot at the bottom. And
yeah.
I still don't see a lot of people doing that. I mean, you probably see more, but I remember watching, and you know, you watch other streamers or people playing video games and they have like their reaction cam and they have the gameplay cam. It's not a new idea. People have been doing it, but I was really wondering why people weren't really doing it for FPV as much. You would see a stick cam sometimes, but not as often a face. And so that was just one thing I used to experiment. And I think at the time, I was like, okay, I think I understand what's going on here. People are missing the human element of this of FPV because they're not seeing what it actually means emotionally to people. And the first video that I guess started to do extremely well was this hot air balloon video I did. And my girlfriend and my aunt were in the back. And they freaked out. And I was like, oh, yeah, don't worry. Like, and I think it was just this whole storytelling arc where like, oh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? He's flying towards a hot air balloon. And then they start screaming. It's like, no, don't worry. So like, there's this like level of drama to it. And I think at that time, I feel like I cracked the code in a sense. I was like, okay, I don't see anybody else really doing this. So let's keep experimenting with this. And I kind of created a template in that way. So back then, that was kind of the way I like to approach it. But now I feel like I kind of want to evolve a little bit more. So I don't have to get into that too much. Maybe we can touch on that later. But I don't know if that answered your question directly, only because I don't know how I would define like a great shot, because I don't know if I've really found that out yet. Like I said earlier, I think my flying is still has a long way to go to get to a level I feel like I've really put in time to do that. Just because if I'm being honest with myself, I'm like, damn, I could really be practicing a lot more than I already do. And I think, yeah, I'm in a very transitionary phase of learning as of now. So hopefully that answers your question somewhat.
It still didn't answer the questions. Yeah, thank you. You were talking about cracking the code and finding what people want to see, which is important to market your skills, you know, because there's one thing about being able to fly and being able to get things done. If you don't know how to show it to the world, and if it doesn't get traction, then you don't get contracts or you don't get, you know, the exposure you need. But that leads to the question, what's a fine line for you between doing what people want to see or need to see to be aware of you and what you actually want to do with your flying?
That's a great question, Nani. And I think, well, I feel like I've been processing this a lot lately, because I remember the high and the rush I got when those videos started to do so well. you know, it felt like after 8 years of making and doing random things on social media, just making posts, making content, dance videos, filming other people, filming myself, making skits. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many cringy eras if you go down back. It's a long road. And it finally, after that, it felt like something clicked. And it's, I think you'll people, if they ever experience this, will understand it when they get there. But it's a blessing and a curse in a lot of ways. I feel extremely mm-hmm. blessed that it happened, because it was a cumulative result of experimenting and then finally something clicking. But at the same time, I think recently, because my audience has been growing, you kind of want to continue feeding the machine. And so when you mm-hmm. find something that works, you naturally want to keep trying to do things that work as well, so that it keeps working, or so it mm-hmm. continues to develop. But at the same time, I think that's kind of why I'm in this phase, is because I feel like my stuff is starting to get stale. And my fear is that it will also start to feel stale to other people. And so it is very much in a mode of thought where this work I'm making is almost to feed the machine and to feed the algorithm. And it's kind of, it's mm-hmm. taken away a lot personally from what I feel would fulfill me. Mm-hmm. And I know you mentioned this, I can't remember if we were rolling or not, but you mentioned how you would always, you started FPV, your passion began in flying particularly, and it's kind of mm-hmm. evolved to this point where you found a new way of bringing value to the community, and that's having conversations with people. And mm-hmm. I think personally, I've always really, really enjoyed this aspect of things. I think mm-hmm. the first time I felt like I was kind of discovering myself as an adult was when I was in Shanghai, China in 2017. I studied abroad for a couple of years, and I had a friend who introduced me to the world of podcasts, and he introduced me to audiobooks. And before that, you know, we had YouTube and things like that, and those are great too. But being able to just sit down and listen to two people talking on a topic and feel like you're in this room with people, it's given me so many perspectives, even to this day, that I never would have had the chance to really internalize and learn. And I really admire you for doing that. I admire people who are doing this kind of thing. And I think I'm in a similar journey right now, because as much as I feel like, as much as I appreciate, you know, people who enjoy my content and they gain their own value from it, it, for me personally, I do kind of feel like there's another level of value that can be brought to the table, beyond just, you know, the fun and simple shots. And I think, well, I'm not going to stop doing that. I think it's still a huge part of how I will be able to offer value, you know, through cinematography and video, that the next step for me is really trying to find exactly what type of good I want to bring to the person watching on the other side. Like, how am I going to change their lives for the better? And when I ask myself that now, I'm like, okay, I guess they're learning what FPV is, and they're learning how to fly drones, which is great. I think you can learn a lot about yourself by learning how to fly FPV. So I think the next thing is just figuring out what is next. And I wish I had a more precise answer for that, but it's nice being able to have the space to talk it out.
Yeah, that's good that you're already questioning, you know, because it is easy to get sucked into at any level, because you have huge numbers on Instagram, things that I have never reached, even at the start of FPV, you know, when you were getting 2,000 views on YouTube, it was good, you know, and now you get 2,000 likes on Instagram, and it's just normal, you know, at any level, I feel like when it's proportional to how big your niche is, it's really easy to get sucked into numbers and likes, and you're like, oh, I just did this and it worked, and if even the original thing that you've done it for yourself, then you might want to replicate it because it worked and you want people to like you. It's human nature. At literally any level, it could be having 5 likes, like it could be having 50,000 likes. So I sympathize a lot with this, and since you said you wanted to learn a little bit about me, I don't know if I've said it on the podcast before. I might have said it, but there was a time where I started getting reached out for sponsors. Because initially, I didn't really want to have sponsors. I know it sounds silly, but I always felt like once you have sponsors, maybe you start having responsibility, and I didn't want to have responsibility. But at the same time, I was thinking if I get sponsors, I get better equipment. So I was already reaching the limit of my equipment at the time, and I'm like, you know, as soon as you have at the time for me, upgrading from just a standard flight controller to a good KISS flight controller, it made my flying incredible. Changing my VTX to Team Black Sheep when Trappy reached out and said, I see that you're using that VTX. Do you want a real VTX? He said, I was like, I said, damn. Yes, sure. You know, so it was really nice to be reached out, or getting drones that were better manufactured and would break a lot less. So you have more time in the air, you know, instead of being grounded, having to fix things. So I ended up saying yes to sponsors, and that went great for a good year and a half. And then you get better exposure as well. It's a nice circle for a while. And then suddenly there is downside to it, because you have jealousy from the community, which, you know, I understand. Everybody can be envious. Like you said earlier, some people might have thought, oh, I definitely fly better than this person, which totally true, probably, you know, like I'm not saying I was a good pilot. And then they don't get anything. And so you have to deal with people voicing that. And then you also start having responsibility towards content. And you're like, I really need to keep doing a video a week. I really need to present this product, even though I had a creative idea for a video. There are deadlines and I need to do a review first. And I used to tell sponsors, another review channel, but sometimes you don't have the choice. You know, once you like a brand and they like you, because it was always genuine, that's not the problem. It was more that the work was getting in the way. And then you could tell that some things were less genuine, and it was lots of work in the background for me, especially for a certain company I was trying to be an ambassador for. And people felt it. People felt like, I don't know, they just felt it. And the comments were hurting more, the negative one, because positive one, I was still getting some. And that's when I'm talking around end of 2018, start of 2019, it actually ruined the hobby for me at some stage, you know, and I became bitter. And I said things about products that were slightly negative that I wish I had not said. You know, if I could go back in time, I would tell myself, girl, you're not happy. It's not the product. It's you. You're not happy right now. and the good thing is, I just, at the same time in my life, I had a big change as well. So it's almost like I stopped everything and I started differently. And I'm glad it happened. And this is why I asked you, you know, have you already seen the fine line between doing what people expect of you, whether it's your audience, the contracts you have or the sponsors you have, and your own happiness? Because it was very important. And I'm glad I went back into the hobby, mainly because I found some good friends again in the area that were not around, and I started flying with them, and that was amazing. Just the human contact. I went back to the roots and it was great. And then the podcast was born because of the pandemic and everything. But I feel like the audience, after hearing you and maybe hearing what I just said, at any level it can happen. You can get a bit too motivated by numbers, and then it becomes negative and it's a bit scary. But you can overcome it.
Yeah, I appreciate you for sharing that story. I think that's extremely important for people to hear, including myself, because while I have had brands reach out to me, thankfully it hasn't been, well, okay, you know what, actually I have kind of felt something similar, where there's been a level of, wow, like, this is amazing. I've been able to get this opportunity, and in exchange, I'm getting, you know, support, whether that's financially or gear wise. And I think you're right. It's a big, first of all, it's big how we perceive it, where is this a really good fit for us? But then also we, often get shaped by our audiences. And I think this is a really important quote that I remember listening to a podcast. There's a guy named Tim Ferriss. He got interviewed by Colin and Samir, who are two creator podcasters. And he, I think it's an important thing to really recognize we do get shaped by our audiences, that we start doing this thing, creating content of things we enjoy or that we think will do well, right? Like we start it with ourselves, but as soon as we lead it out into the world and the world responds to it, it takes a life of its own. And it's exactly why I think I started feeling the way I did. Every time I've made work, it did well. And then I started making work to imitate that work because I thought it would do well, not because I wanted to do it. And I think as soon as that begins, the relationship with it can get really complicated. And this, I think the important lesson here that I'm, the reason why I'm being so reflective of what's next for me content-wise is because I don't want to fall in that trap again. I don't want to be driven by numbers anymore, at least as a priority. It's important to know as a skill set and to learn how to understand how to generate people attention so that you can get people to watch and consume what you're looking at. But as soon as that becomes the priority versus the means to the end, then we quickly, I think we quickly start doing it for the wrong reasons, and it can be very easy to get bitter, burnt out, or just lose interest in what we're doing. And this reminds me of something I was listening to a while back, but I know as you are a content creator, I'm sure you have a lot of, you do in a sense have an entrepreneurial mindset. And I think a lot of us who are doing this and doing work we're passionate about, we want to do this as a living. We want to find a way to hopefully sustain ourselves in some way, shape, or form doing what we're doing because we're putting so much time and effort and love into it. And I remember learning about this concept. Have you heard of the FIRE movement before, like financially independent, retire early? Okay, so this is a community or like a mindset in the financial, in the finance world where it's the idea where you basically upfront invest and save and make as much money as you can so that you can retire like by the time you're 40 or something like that, like super, like 20 years early or 30 years early. And I remember when I first hear that, everyone's like, that's amazing. Like, I want to retire when I'm 40. And so, you know, you kind of start learning more about this, and it requires a lot of sacrifice and in investment upfrontness. And while I didn't personally go for FIRE, it was still kind of like an idea to me when I started this, that as I've been going on this journey, I've been wanting to find a way to productize or monetize as fast as possible. Because I told myself that once I figure out how to monetize, then I can worry about the passion or finding exactly what makes me happy. And from my experience personally so far, not to say that there's a right or wrong way, but from the way I've gone about it, is whenever I put money first, the idea of making a product or making something in order to monetize as fast as possible, that becomes the goal. And when that became the goal, there's a really interesting analogy. They say it's almost like when you decide to put your happiness aside for the later future, it's like getting into a toxic relationship so that you can be happy later, right? And you say that's not really the same thing, but then you think about it and it's like, okay, well, are you gonna be happy at all during this time when you're trying to build this life for yourself? And if the answer is no, then that's exactly what it would be like for a toxic relationship. Like, why would you spend the prime years or the early years of your life being unhappy when there's so much time, when there's so much things you can do now that you won't be able to do later, only so you can enjoy it when you're older. When if we can remind ourselves to put and prioritize what is important to us. It doesn't mean you have to give up finance. That's not what I'm saying here. It's just like, that's important. It's the means to an end. But once we have the gear we need, right? Like you have that flight controller or you have that gear, then you hit a cap and it's like, okay, well, I'm no longer fighting to survive anymore. What if I could build this thing I want to build and enjoy doing it so that when I reach that goal, I don't realize like, oh, I was doing this all for the wrong reasons again. I think this might've been, I think you were talking with your co-host about this, but she said something about like climbing up a ladder and then realizing like when you finally get to the ladder, it's the wrong ladder, right? I feel like it can be an easy trap to fall into. So I resonate with that. That's some real shit. Sorry for the rant, but I think that applies to what we're talking about.
Yeah, you're really right. And for me, I can relate to what you say with the, it's a balance between your current happiness and the happiness you hope you will still have later when you will have built your goal. And it's hard to figure out sometimes. In my own experience, when I started flying FPV and drones, I was really happy because I was finally making videos. I wanted to make videos and I'm like, hopefully I can make this for a living. And drones became my entry door to creativity and creative field, because my background on paper is mechanical engineer. And I was like, how do I go from being a qualified mechanical engineer to a creative, which is who I actually wanted to be? So it's funny because drones, you know, you have to learn how to solder, you have to learn lots of things. It's a little bit of engineering, even though it's not fully engineering, but you know, it has a technical side of it. And I'm glad that I was able to use it to enter the field of video making. But then at some stage, I was like, okay, YouTube is slightly starting to grow. You know, in the first year, I went quickly and, you know, I was following a good trajectory behind Mr. Steele, behind, you know, Joshua, maybe not Joshua Bardwell, but the trajectory was, could have been similar. I don't know if I would have peaked as much as them, but I could have maybe have several, like 50,000 followers, for example, you know. But life decided otherwise. But also what helped me is that once the door was open with YouTube, with social media, I was able to reach people in real life, not just online, to find jobs that were creative. Wow. And it was hard. And the first job I actually found was selling drones.
Oh,
but
okay.
Then while I was selling them and fixing them in a hobby shop, One day I told my boss, hey, I want to make a quick vlog about what's going on here for my channel. Can I do that? And he was like, yeah, sure. And I made it. And he was like, that's brilliant. I like how you captured the vibe of the hobby store. A bit like a newbie drone, you know. It was the same kind of guys. And, you know, they were worth putting a camera on them. He said, do you want to do that for the store itself? And we started a YouTube channel for the hobby store. Mm. So I did that for them and it got traction. It helped with sales because suddenly people were putting faces behind the store online and they liked them. And so I am grateful that all the work I had put in my YouTube channel, first off, also helped someone else. And then as I had my portfolio, you know, naturally my portfolio happened. And that's how I ended up being hired by a professional video and photography company, which I thought I could have never got. At the time when I applied for it, I just didn't care. I was like, yeah, whatever, I'm not going to get it, but it's fun and I can do it. Like I can, the requirements were taking photos of something and I just had an idea and I'm like, I have the idea, I have time, let's do it. and it worked. So it's so funny how works, how life works. But yeah. All of this just to say that for me at the moment, when it comes back to FPV content, I am grateful that I can do whatever I want and I don't care about numbers and I definitely don't get the same numbers I used to get. But that's because now I'm doing something I really love every day with work. So with FPV, if I want to put a chair in the middle of a tennis court and ask my friend, hey, should we film us trying to go through the leg of the chair? I really don't care if it's going to be two people watching or 2,000. I'm just like, but that's because on the side, I found really something that really fulfills me every day. And I feel like it's hard for people still like you where, I know you have your video company on the side, which I want to talk about, but, because your source of enjoyment, FPV, and your source of enjoyment of being a content creator is still linked, I feel like the pressure is on and on and on all the time.
You hit on the nail, for sure. That's a very good way of putting it. Okay, interesting. Well, let me ask you this then. I'm curious, currently at the job you're at, is it the construction one you talked about, or is this a different company?
Yes,
okay,
it's a construction company. So I do video and photography and drone work and FPV work with that company. I go every day to work, you know, and the good thing is we do exactly what I was hoping we would do. We tell stories in a way, wow. You know, and we're going more and more towards that path as well, because the team I work with, there's like some very good people. There's people with experience in cinema, so they love storytelling as well. I have one of my colleague, I had him on the podcast I think 3 times already. He's very a big inspiration for me. He has a short movie. He loves cinema and sci-fi, and working with him, it's teaching me a lot. But also we work a bit like we feed each other's loop. I hope he feels like that. But yeah, so we're slowly our baseline of work is construction, but we're hoping that we can soon deliver more to, you know, other industries. Even our current clients in construction use us for different projects that we don't have to film construction. We're filming more them and their company, and you know, so I can't say too much about it, but it doesn't Perfect. Always have to be filming a big crane. Sometimes we also start telling stories about people, which is what I love. And
that's perfect.
And yeah, that's great. Wow. So that's why name? I wanted to sorry,
what's his name, your friend, just so I can look it up later.
Raymond.
All right. I'll be listening yeah. to those.
Awesome. I think you will like it. He's a very inspiring person. So my question is, what about your video company? Do you think that could be something that you can balance your content creation profile with, and maybe find fulfillment in both, but in different ways?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think I've kind of, you're right. It's a very interesting relationship to navigate. And mm-hmm. Just to ask, Oni, are you part Japanese?
No.
Okay. Are you part Asian?
But no. But
oh, really?
I've been asked a lot.
Yeah.
So when it was time to choose my handle, I had Onigiri as a handle for a very long time. Because when I used to write blog. Because when I was in high school, blogs were like you know, the cool yeah. thing to do. And I didn't want to sign it with my name. And at the time, I was my boyfriend was Asian, and I was like, you know, I was, I don't know. They my friend used to call me Onigiri, but in French, because okay. I was with this guy, which, to be honest, I feel like now it's slightly racist, but he was okay with it. He was okay with it. So I kept it. I kept Onigiri, and then it kept confusing people. And recently I had a Japanese person on YouTube asking me for, a Korean person asking me for tips to fly in Japan. And I was like, I'm not in Japan.
That's funny.
Sorry.
That's funny.
So yeah.
I only asked that because I was wondering if you're familiar with the concept of ikigai. Have you heard of it before?
Not too sure. Maybe if you explain it.
Okay.
We'll see.
Maybe. Yeah, we'll see. Ikigai. So from my understanding of it is it's a Japanese philosophy. And if you would just imagine four circles, there are four circles that are like in a cross formation, and there's a Venn diagram that's intersecting in the center. I don't remember which circle is what, but they're kind of, it kind of matters where they are, but it kind of doesn't. Basically, the four circles are: one, what you're good at; two, mm-hmm. what the world needs; three, what you can be paid for; and four, what was the fourth one? What the world needs, what you're good at, what you can be paid for, what you love. So there's these four things, right? And I feel like these are the most important things in terms of finding your purpose. And mm-hmm. I'm always kind of putting myself in that circle, like, where exactly am I now? And it changes so often, because I remember mm-hmm. when I first started, it was like, I love breakdance, and I'm like, can I get paid for this? Like, no, not really. So I was like super in that in this thing, and then I found like video, and it's like, okay, can I get paid for this? Yeah. And like, how much does the world need it? I mean, it depends on what you're shooting. So I'm like, good question. So then started going around, and then FPV, you know, like, it's always moving. And so I think this is always a great compass for evaluating where I am. And I think when you asked that question about the video production and the content creation, that is kind of one of the things I play with in terms of how can I find this thing. And it's cool how you've been able to structure your life where you've found an outlet that you can, you both enjoy, can, you are good at, right? You can be paid for it. And the world needs it because they're hiring you for it. So it's like, that's pretty good. And then on top of that, you're doing FPV. So there's like no pressure in terms of like what you do in this world. right? And I think because of the nature of what I do, everything is so intertwined. And so everything is always kind of moving. And so I'm still figuring that out, but thankfully not all of the pressure is on FPV to make a living. In fact, it's like it fluctuates, like how much I make off of FPV per month, because it's all freelance and job based. So sometimes I get like some really great jobs in FPV that will like cover multiple months of what I would hope to make. And then other months I'd get nothing, like no FPV jobs. And in between, I still have a lot of work that thankfully helps sustain me. And it usually ends up being like filming dance stuff or filming a music video or helping on a commercial, whether it's drone or not drone. And thankfully I enjoy it. So ikigai wise, if I look at it, like what I love is still always kind of there and present, which is why I think it's important not to burn that side of me out. But I think right now, that's why business and learning about business is so important for me, because I've been on this path of trying to create a sustainable lifestyle for myself. And I still have yet to step into like a full-time salary job yet. That's something that I am not closed off to doing, but I think just because I haven't been extremely active in finding it, this is kind of the path I've found for myself. And thankfully it's worked out so far. I know my dad is definitely concerned about it and being like, "Go get a real job." And I'm like, I will if they want me, but no, you know, like, but yeah, so it's just, it's a mix of that. But as of now, I've really enjoyed going the freelance and entrepreneur route, just because it's kind of forced me to learn so many skills. And I think if I didn't, I wouldn't have been able to build the audience I have so far. And right now I'm in the point where, like I said, I'm trying not to make money the priority, because if I do that too much, then that puts everything else, like the passion, at jeopardy. And I think that's important to realize as well. So I'm in a season where, it's funny because you mentioned blogging was cool back then. I wouldn't say everyone is blogging anymore, but I started a newsletter a couple months ago, like me, you know, and that's not something I ever really saw myself doing. But I realized through all this video stuff, my writing, I never considered myself a writer, because I've always been so intimidated by it. I would always be like, I don't need to write. I have a camera. Why do I need to write? And then the more I learned and like the more I got down, like, damn, like if you don't know how to write, you don't know how to plan out your shots and what you need to do and articulate your thoughts and emotions, then you're going to have a good time. You're going to have a bad time. So that has actually been really nice. And I've honestly been enjoying that like the most of everything I've been doing, even though it's not really making me money. I've really, really enjoyed it. I feel myself getting better, and thankfully the feedback has been good. And ultimately it is also kind of a business process, because if you learn about marketing then and you learn about funnels and like sales and all these things, then even amongst all this, even amongst TikTok and social media and Instagram and all this stuff, somehow email marketing is still the highest converting medium. So if there is a product or something that I decide to create that I feel passionate about and I'm not trying to make just to like money grab, then when I'm ready, I've already built this relationship with my audience that's deeper than just like an FPV video. And I can be like, hey, like if you want this, then feel free to grab it. And that's also, so it's kind of hitting all those points on the ikigai circle right now. So yeah, I'm still figuring it out as I go. And it's been good. I know it's like not exactly where I want to be, but I hope this recording will serve as a good blueprint to show that you don't need to be like loaded to be happy.
That's true. Yes.
Yeah.
Where can we access your newsletter? I'm curious now.
Sure. Yeah. I can give you a link to put in the show notes, but it's also just vertigoh.vision/blog.
Okay.
Vertigo, I know, is not spelled with an H at the end. I did that because my last name is Go with an H and I thought it'd be funny. And now it's biting me in the ass whenever I say it in words, because the H is silent and people are just like, but anyway, it is what it is.
This is interesting because I can't say too much either, I think, but we are looking into marketing with our current business at the moment because we're growing, and marketing, not only marketing is important, but also like telling your current customers, clients, and contacts what you're doing, because sometimes they know you for something and you in the meantime have done some innovation and you have new technology available and you forget to tell them because they keep hiring you for the same thing and it's working, and you know, but sometimes they might be interesting in something else, like FPV, for example. So we are definitely working on strategy to improve our marketing, and a newsletter is very important, you know, blogging, finding ways to tell the client, yeah, this is where I'm at the moment, in case you're interested, this is what I'm doing. So I think it's a smart move, and you're doing the right thing, because social, not everybody is on social media either, or not everybody is at the right time on social media, because you know, you are not in charge. It's not like my podcast. This is also why I like podcasts. There's no algorithm. If people go in their podcast apps, they have the notification, hey, this is what's new. And I don't depend on how many people listen to it. It's not going to be pushed. It's there. Whereas you could have the best intentions, you could have the best talent. Sometimes if the algorithm starts working against you, it's not fun. It's not a so newsletter is good. You're in control of it, and whether it doesn't matter how many people open it, the people who are subscribed or the people who know the link to access it, they will see it. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It's beautiful, and it kind of takes off that pressure of having to perform for the algorithm too, which is why I think I've enjoyed it so much. And I maybe you feel similarly about the podcast, because you're not performing for the algorithm. You're just talking about what you want to. And if people want to tune in, they can. And they will.
Exactly. we're gonna finish off soon, but I still have a couple of questions. Literally just to lighten up the mood. I want to ask about your inspiration and things like this. So do you have favorite pilots, and do you have favorite content creator in general that really inspire you when you watch them?
Yeah. Let me think. So they're obviously like the OGs that I, in my head, the OGs that were the ones that kind of got me started. So I mentioned Johnny FPV in the beginning. Whenever someone mentions him, or like they ask me how I got into it, I call him the Kobe of FPV. I'm like, that's him for me. So go watch his stuff. He's dope. But obviously Joshua Bardwell, I say he's like the Jesus of FPV. So go read his Bible. That's kind of how I describe him to people. And then who else is there? I've really enjoyed like Vanover and Nurk. I really enjoy people who are amazing pilots, Tommy Umagod, you know, and are putting out content that is relatable and like that helps. I think when I was in that season of learning FPV, those are all like people I'd constantly watch. I think now, what have I been watching recently? Okay, so this is interesting. I think, well, Casey Neistat, of course, I have him to thank for showing us what is possible on YouTube, being able to create higher quality storytelling on YouTube. And that's why I've continued to pursue social media, because I feel like there is so much potential to tell great stories and to build a connection with people, even if it's on a free platform that anybody can watch. And I feel grateful to be part of this generation, and I'm continuing to move towards that. So I've definitely been in a season of learning over the last couple of years. I'm always in a season of learning, but I think I've always been so productivity focused. Like everything needs to be towards the goal of doing business. But more recently, I feel like I've been re-exploring the things that make the inner kid in me excited. And so I've been watching more content that isn't necessarily business centric, but I've been watching a lot more like Pokemon content and stuff like that. Just stuff that awesome. Makes me happy, you know, like, and watching anime and stuff like that. And yeah, that would be kind of the stuff I've been watching more recently. So it's not always on. I feel like I have to reconnect back to that inner child if I really want to make stuff that is authentically myself.
It is important, because As a kid, we usually know what makes us tick, you know, and it's natural to us. We gravitate towards what we love. And then sometimes life goes a bit different, and you pushed in another way. And it's awesome. Like, you have to go back to what you like, and then you'll find inspiration even more, because you'll be happy. So
yeah. Quick, before you answer that before the next question, I have to ask. I just realized that in the corner of your desk, is that the series of unfortunate events?
Yes.
Hey, let's go. Yes. My mom got me that same box when I was a kid. I had the same one.
Yeah?
I'm missing the Grim Grotto. It's missing, and it's bothering the shit out of me. So, but anyway, it's so good. I feel like that's perfect on the topic we were talking about. You got to keep
the
things
that. I love these books.
It's so good.
I finally finished them this year. So quick tangent, I got the first one from a friend when I was 12 or something, and then I never got the following ones, so I was borrowing them from her because my parents didn't really want to buy them for me because they thought the ratio of how quick I was reading them and the price was not fair for them. So they wanted to buy books that I was going to take 5 days to read, not like one day.
Dang, so that's why they were,
yeah, they were like, no, you read them too quick. So we're not buying them. And your friend has them. So you borrow them from her. So I was borrowing them from my friend. And then we parted ways because that was in middle school. I went to another high school and I couldn't have the books anymore. So I finally bought them last year and I finished them this year, and I'm so, so happy. I was happy as a kid.
Yes, that's beautiful. I love that. I feel like that's perfectly on just what we were just talking about.
Yes, and I bought them secondhand, and I bought them from a mom who had them for her daughter, and she said, oh, that's awesome, who are you buying them for? And I'm like, for me? Because she was thinking I had a child or something. I'm like, no, it's for me. And she was like, for you? I'm like, yeah.
Like, come on. For you. Let's go.
Yeah. So amazing. Speaking of inner child, I'm glad you like this too. I feel like that it's very inspiring. I love these books.
It's really good. Highly recommend. 10 out of 10.
Yes. My next question was, what do you have some favorite moments or memories as a FPV pilot or content creator that, like, you know, when you think of them, you're like, oh yeah, that's why I do this.
Yeah. There was one that, or actually I feel like I've started to realize just what makes me the happiest when I make work. And it's really not just about the work and the shoots, because when I'm doing shoots that are really awesome, like, yes, they're awesome. And then I have like really cool work to share for it. But if I'm really being honest with myself and I look back at that memory, if I go back and watch the video, I'm like, that was sick. That was a cool day. But if it wasn't like, if it was around people I was being for the first time and that was kind of like a touch and go relationship, then it doesn't really leave that much of an imprint in my head. It's more of those times when I'm with a friend. I'm with someone that I really feel connected with, that someone that I feel like I was able to go on a journey with, in a sense. And one particular example I remember, or two, I'll go with one. There was a shoot I did, because this was awesome. It's probably like one of the apexes of my job so far. It's not like I'm rolling in these jobs, but I got very lucky. And a friend recommended me as a pilot for a music festival that Netflix was throwing for one of their shows. And I was like, oh, heck yeah. So we had to do a lot of permitting to get like the proper drone, because it was in a red area. And then we're flying over people. So I made sure we had all the right things, sub 249G and everything like that. But the thing that I think really made it stick in my head was a couple things. First off, I was with my friend Caesar, who is one of the kids who taught me how to fly drones. Like, a lot of the people who taught me how to fly FPV are like 4 or 5 or 6 years younger than me. It's really funny. they're like little Peter Parkers running around, and then they know how to build these drones for some reason. But obviously they're kids, so they're still learning. So while he would teach me drone stuff, I teach him production stuff. And so I'll bring him onto my jobs often as a visual observer. And I remember it was definitely a challenging job because there were so many things they wanted us to get. But the last shot we got was during Khalid's performance. And I love Khalid, great music. And so during the flight, I was like having a crazy good time. But it was after the flight, I remember just taking off the goggles and like taking a big deep breath out, like, we're done. And just like watching like the rest of his set, like the two of us just together, just enjoying it. And I was like, damn, like, this is great. You know, this is a good time. It was, nice. Yeah, I think those are definitely one of the memories, or those are the memories that I really enjoy. Or cool jobs are dope, but it's always enjoying it after with like people that you care about, that I think is the things that really stay with you.
That's awesome. I like it. my final question, sometimes I ask people, what's next, you know, but I feel like we've touched a little bit on this, and maybe you can come back another time on the podcast and we'll see what actually is different then. So the alternative question is, what advice you have either received yourself and want to share with people, or what advice you want to give people that you have not heard before, but, you know, think can be important or helpful to them, you would like to share?
Okay, let me think. I actually have one that I feel like it's a little bit of a more deep piece of advice that I'm debating if I should share or not, because it's a little bit dramatic.
I like dramatic.
All right,
if it's
we're
the
doing
first
it.
Thing that came to your mind, I think it's a good sign that
All
it
right,
needs
we're doing
to be
it.
Shared.
We're doing it. Okay, so there's a couple different points to this story, but I remember the story I just told you, actually, and a couple other shots, that a lot of my flights, they involve flying over people. And the laws and the rules around that are very gray, because technically, when you fly a sub-249G drone, in the US at least, that is eligible through, I believe, Category 1 or 2, to do that, to do sustained flight over people, and if it's protected. I remember having a conversation with another pilot from another country, a very esteemed pilot that may be a mutual friend of ours. He left a comment on one of my posts, and he was someone I really, really looked up to. I still look up to him a lot, but I remember this comment was very critical, and he had a lot of warrant saying it. He called me like very irresponsible, and he was like kind of calling me out and a lot of other people for doing what we did. I responded to him both in the comment as respectfully as I could and through DMs. I took it to a personal chat, and I was telling him, hey, like, I want you to know that there was no ill will in this flight, and that we did the due diligence the best we could in order to make sure this flight was as safe as possible. That wasn't enough for him, unfortunately, and I feel like he didn't really let up. I remember telling him, like, hey, like, I really want you to know, like, this is not something that I want you should think that we're doing this like irresponsibly, like we're doing our best. And he was like, no, I think it speaks, like, your actions speak louder than your words. And I don't know. I don't think he's wrong in that way. Like, I think a lot of FPV pilots, like myself included, we push the boundaries a little bit. And I think that can ruffle people the wrong way. And so, yeah, talking with him definitely changed the way I operate. And I think as my platform grows, I have to continue to be a little bit more responsible each time. And that's definitely important, you know? I would say there's two pieces to this story. One is, like, yes, definitely be important or be diligent in making sure what you're doing, like, as a pilot, because especially if you're flying at events and things like this, that it's really amazing, but it's also, it can be a high-risk tool, you know? Like, anything can happen, you can fail safe, and the drone can fall on someone. So I think do your best to do your research and make sure what you're doing is right. Him saying that to me, even though he's from a different country, does make me second guess if what I was doing was correct. And I'll leave it up to you. You know, whoever is listening to this, like, you have to kind of draw your line in terms of what is right and what is wrong. Obviously, the laws are laws. And sometimes laws conflict or may leave out certain details. And so I think that one, that piece of advice is more just like, find your best answer that you can for yourself. And then the second thing is, I think when it comes to the opinions of others and the beliefs of others, because even though he was very strong on that stance, I talk with other people, and obviously each person has their own opinion. So I think that's important to do too, is taking criticism with a grain of salt. I feel like I like to see the best in people. So I know a lot of people might just be like, nah, fuck that guy. Like, nah, he doesn't know what he's talking about. But I think for me, I'm like, nah, I want to respect each person and what they have to say. So for me, it does definitely stay with me. But for people who are kind of going down a journey and they receive criticism, it is super important for us to not let that deter us. And I remember going through it myself. I still go out, and I think you have been through a fair share of that yourself, Osoni. You mentioned it earlier with the whole criticism thing. But people are going to have their opinions, and if we're people pleasers or if we're people who like care about our audiences and the people around us, then we're going to take that to heart. But we can't allow that to stop us from doing what we love. And, you know, we have to take that into account and keep moving forward. So that would be the piece of advice I would leave is obviously be considerate of people's opinion, but you can't let that noise stop you from moving forward and finding the thing that is yours.
That's awesome. In life in general as well. Well, thank you for today. Thanks for joining. I have lots of questions still about, you know, your content in general, but I try to keep my podcast within an hour. So that's the bad news. But the good news is you will definitely have to come back if you enjoyed it.
Yeah, if you have me, I would love to. This was a lot of fun. Thank you again, Oni.
Awesome. And thanks no worries.
For doing all this. It was a really good time.
Awesome. I'm glad you liked it. As a reminder, if people want to see your content, where can they go? What should they type? Like, it's the moment you advertise yourself.
Yes. Okay. Sounds good. So my at is Kai Vertigo, KAIVERTIGOH. You can find me on Instagram, on YouTube, and TikTok if you want. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to subscribe to the newsletter that I've been working on, then that's going to be on my website, vertigoh.vision/blog. So that's like the word vertigo with an H at the end and then .vision/blog. And yeah, that's all I have to say. And then follow the podcast if you enjoyed it. Take a look at it.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. And thanks everybody for watching. Thanks for listening. If you like it, you know, you can rate us in the apps. You can share it with your friends. If you think that's a topic that can even inspire people outside of FPV, feel free to share it. I have a Patreon. I have 2 patrons now. Woohoo!
Let's go.
And this helps me support mainly the software we're recording on today, like you and I for videos and things like that. It helps a lot with my post-production, which means it helps me produce an episode every second week, you know. So if you feel like supporting financially, you can go to Patreon. If you feel like you prefer supporting differently, sharing and rating is the best way to do it. So thanks everybody. Go follow Kai's journey. It's I've been sucked into it through newbie drones and I haven't left since then, so you should totally follow this person, and we'll see you and hear you again in about 2 weeks time. Thank you everybody. Bye. Thank you.